Welcome to the 307th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host today, Patrick Winograd. This is going to be a very abbreviated version of the podcast, but in this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions. I'm talking about the Final Four in the NCAA tournament, and also that's obviously a preview, but we will review the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And then we will talk about the NBA, and then there's a bit of an important announcement at the end of the podcast, but again, it will be an abbreviated version, just to focus more on actually the announcement that we're making rather than the predictions in the podcast itself. But starting with my weekend predictions, I went 4-0 in college basketball and 3-1 in the NBA, which means that my overall record is now at 13-10-8-16 overall, which is a 61.6% winning percentage. Overall, pretty satisfied with my predictions, of course. I don't know why I wouldn't be, given the record. But if you look at it individually, game by game, starting in college basketball, I had Alabama beating BYU, I had Florida beating Maryland, I had Michigan State beating Ole Miss, and I had Tennessee beating Kentucky. So all of those predictions in Sweet 16 games, of course, two of those were the Thursday matchups, two of those were the Friday matchups, but regardless, the accuracy, of course, is what's important here. And again, those games are all pretty good. We're going to talk about them in a second, so I won't spend too much time on that. But I'm, of course, very happy that I got all of them right. And then in the NBA, I got three games right. The Magic beat the Kings, the Lakers beat the Grizzlies, and the Rockets beat the Suns. The first two games were on Friday, or sorry, on Saturday. And the last two were on Sunday. But the interesting thing is that I got the Pistons-Timberwolves game wrong, which is not interesting in isolation, but it was interesting because the reason I got that game wrong is because multiple Pistons players were ejected due to a huge fight that broke out in that game, actually, which, of course, somewhat surprising when you consider, you know, it's an East Coast or an Eastern Conference team versus a Western Conference team. Not like there's an existing rivalry there or anything like that, but yeah, big fight broke out and a few ejections there. I think seven total ejections, including JB Bickerstaff, the coach of the Pistons, and a lot of their important players in that game. So you know, kind of an odd game that I ended up predicting. Wasn't expecting that, but again, definitely satisfied with the performance. 3-1 in the NBA when the only game that you get wrong is due to an ejection or due to multiple ejections, kind of shifting the game. Don't feel too bad about that being my only loss this week. Otherwise, as I said, I'm 7-1 week. So that's pretty good. But now moving away from the weekend predictions, of course, talking about the Sweet 16, just talked about a few of those games. Of course, Florida beat Maryland, close at the half, but Florida took over in the second half in that one. Pushed that lead out to 16 by the end of the game after only leading by two at the half. But Florida moves on to the Elite Eight. Then you had Duke beat Arizona 100-93, a high-scoring game. But Duke, you know, kind of played this game in Arizona's style and Arizona's speed, but it didn't really matter. They just played better while playing Arizona's style. Of course, Caleb Love had 35 points in this game. He won't go any games against Duke without an iconic performance, it seems. And then you had Cooper Flagg with 36-7. On the other side of things, just a monster performance from him. Then you had Alabama, who set a tournament record for basically everything related to three-pointers. Mark Sears had 34 points and 8 assists and 3 steals in that game with 10 threes. They beat BYU 113-88. And then I think what you would call the game of the tournament, Texas Tech beat Arkansas 85-83 in overtime. Texas Tech overcoming a 16-point deficit in that game in the second half to force overtime, and then eventually secure that victory over Arkansas. So all those teams moving on to the Elite Eight, moving on to the Friday action. It was Auburn who defeated Michigan 78-65, another game, kind of like the Florida-Maryland game, where Auburn was only up by one at the half. They turned it over a lot in the first half, but then they took over in the second half, went on, I think, a 20-2 run at some point in that game, and if you extend it longer, it's probably a bigger point spread, but not as impressive, in my opinion, as 22, but they ended up winning 78-65, as I said. Then you had Houston and Purdue. Houston playing basically on the road in Indianapolis. I don't even know if you can say basically it was a road game. Playing in Indianapolis, even though they were the one seed in that region, which was a little bit crazy, but they're getting a home Final Four because the Final Four obviously is in San Antonio, so it's about as good as you can get for location there. But overall, as I said before, they had to play Gonzaga in the second round. They've definitely had the hardest path of any team, and they still came out on top. They trailed by two at the half in this game, but won 62-60 on a great inbounds play. There might have been a push off before that that allowed that possession to happen, but that's neither here nor there. Houston wins 62-60. Then, number two seeded Michigan State, the last Big Ten team alive, beat Ole Miss, the sixth seed, 73-70. Actually, I think that Ole Miss game was earlier in the day than the Houston game, so technically they were the last team remaining. But they ended up being the last team remaining because they, of course, won that game to move on. Ole Miss led at the half, but really kind of lost the game. I think a lot of people talked about this, especially the on-air guys. They kind of lost the game at the end of the first half. They were up 33-25. Michigan State. Just kind of in a lot of trouble, but Sean Padula picked up his second foul, and Ole Miss couldn't continue the momentum when he was on the bench. So they squandered that 8-point lead, only ended up having a 2-point lead at the half, and then Michigan State was able to barely outscore them in the second half to win that game 73-70, like I said. Then Tennessee beat Kentucky 78-65. Sad for Kentucky because they had already beaten Tennessee twice this year, but the one game that they chose to not play their best against the Vols was the one that actually mattered the most, of course. So very unfortunate end to the season for Kentucky. But at the same time, you look around this tournament, there are a lot of interesting stories. But two of them, I think, were on that day. There were first-year head coaches who took over their programs, had completely new rosters, had to completely rebuild from scratch. They got their programs to the Sweet 16. Obviously, Kentucky, that's the expectation, but that hasn't been the results recently. And then with Michigan, I mean, Michigan has made the Sweet 16 in six of the last eight tournaments and all of the last six tournaments that the program has made. But again, two missed tournaments in there. Maybe not exactly the expectation at Michigan to go to the Sweet 16 every year, especially not in the first year of a head coach or of a head coach's tenure. But still, a great performance by Dusty May's team to get to the Sweet 16. And then, you look at Purdue, they reload without Zach Edey somehow immediately. Just DKR stepping right into that role, carrying that team in the post. And then you have Ole Miss, again, Chris Beard in his first few years, not in his first year, but in one of his first few years with the Rebels, taking that team to heights that they really don't often reach. So a lot of interesting stories in this one. And then, obviously, the news that Kevin Willard is leaving Maryland for Nova means that, that program's first Sweet 16 in some time is short-lived in terms of the afterglow of that. But then you have number one Florida, who beat Texas Tech 84-79 in the Elite Eight. Texas Tech led this game by 10, had I think a 96% per winning percentage or w chance of winning again for on ESPN, but they missed two front ends of a one and one back to back, and then let Florida shoot four straight threes on four possessions, and that ended up giving Florida the lead at the end of the game, despite the fact that Texas Tech had controlled the second half. And in the end, Florida advances to the Final Four, the first one seed, but definitely not the last. Duke, the number one team, or is number one seed in their region as well, beat Alabama 85-65. Honestly, not much to this game other than Alabama shot 25 of 51 in the round before from three. In this round, they just couldn't get it going from three whatsoever. That's kind of their game, and they shot 25%, so just not good enough. 8 of 32 from the field, or sorry, 8 of 32 from three. Duke 6 of 13. So I mean, Duke made two fewer shots on 19 fewer attempts. That is not something that will allow Alabama to win games. They just can't do that. But unfortunately, the Tide's run comes to a close there. But on Sunday, it was Houston who beat Tennessee 69-50. Talk about playing your game. Alabama did not do that. Houston did. They held Tennessee to 15 points in the first half, led 34-15. Tennessee, the fewest points by a top two seed in a game ever. And then you had the second half was actually even 35-35. But I mean, technically, this game was a race to 50 as soon as Tennessee had only 15 in the first half. They weren't going to score more than 30, 35-ish in the second half. That's exactly what they did end up scoring. But Houston, even the playing field, they scored 35 of their own in the second half, won that game 69-50 to make it 3-1 seeds in the Final Four. And then finally, Zinai Broome and Auburn, excuse me, defeated Michigan State 70-64 to advance to the Final Four themselves. Of course, Auburn, the number one overall seed. You could argue they've been the best team all year long. They lost three of their last four heading into the tournament, but maybe that was due to a lack of focus, trying to prepare for the tournament, maybe experimenting with things. Who knows? Ask an Auburn fan might be a better idea than asking me, to be honest. But this game was really interesting. Auburn led 33-24 at the half, but then Jani Broome got injured in the second half, left for about, I think, 4, 5, 6 minutes of game time, and then came back and drilled a three immediately after it looked like he'd injured his shoulder and his ankle, actually, or maybe his elbow, not his shoulder, but grabbing at something on his arm, and then also twisted his ankle, but came back out of the locker room, hit a three, grabbed a few rebounds, and it was just the lift that Auburn needed because it felt like the game was turning in Michigan State's favor, even though Auburn was still up by 7 or 8 points. And Auburn was kind of lacking the big shot making that they needed to close out that game, even though they hit a few in that span. They needed more. But then Jani Broome came out and just said, "I'll do it myself." And Auburn, of course, ends that game winning 70-64. Although that final score is a lot less close than the game, or a lot closer than the game actually was by the end of it. Michigan State took advantage of Auburn doing some very silly things late in the game with the ball. And of course, Auburn making it means the all one seed Final Four. If you go back to the pre-tournament podcast, I said, I just don't see the one seeds losing. I am purely picking against that because I want to maximize my points in bracket pools, which was exactly what happened. And Texas Tech did come the closest, which was they were the one three seed that I had in my Final Four. I had them, and then I had Alabama. Said Alabama just needed to get hot for a weekend and make shots. They used up all the made shots in one game, unfortunately, in the game against BYU. They probably didn't need to make all those shots in that game, but they did. So no shots were left for the Duke game. And of course, then the other 2-1 seeds were the ones that I had. But we are in for an amazing Final Four. These are four really, really, really good teams, and they're all playing different styles. Duke kind of, at the beginning of the year, was more of a defensive team, slowly transitioned into an explosive offensive team, despite the fact that, if you want to talk about the greatest attributes of some of their players, you could argue Cooper Flagg isn't as good of a scorer as he is a defender. I mean, it's probably not a correct argument, but you could probably make it, and it wouldn't sound that far-fetched. And then Kaman Malawach, obviously, is just maybe the best rim protector in the country, despite being a freshman. But he definitely cleans up the glass and makes sure that everyone is afraid to go into the paint. Could definitely see that in the Alabama game. Then, of course, you have Jani Broome and Auburn, kind of the same style with them. They got two bigs rolling. Broome, obviously a player of the year kind of guy, and then a bunch of 3-point shooters around him. And then you have Houston, who's the all defense team. And, they just suffocate you. And then you have Florida, who, of course, is kind of the guard show. They're relying on Will Richard, Walter Clayton, Elijah Martin to deliver them the title that they have been waiting for since they repeated way back when, or I guess not way back when, like 20 years ago at this point. But that's all we have for college basketball. We will move on now to a brief review of the NBA. Starting in the Eastern Conference, what once seemed like an insurmountable lead is no longer insurmountable. In fact, it's only 4 games. The Cavs, they did hit 60 wins. They're at 60-15, their first 60-win season without LeBron on the team. But the Celtics aren't too far behind. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They're 56-19 overall, just 4 games back. Like I said, they have won 9 in a row, actually. So 9-1 in their last 10 is selling them short a little bit. But then in third, you have the Knicks at 47-27. They have now clinched a playoff spot. Of course, the Celtics and the Cavs have clinched their divisions, which I don't think really matters for anything, but it used to matter, so still a thing. But the Cavs haven't, of course, clinched home field just yet, like I just said. Only 7 games left for them, though, so not much ground for the Celtics to actually make up, but technically still possible. Then you have the Pacers there in fourth. They're 7-3 in their last 10 at 44-31 now overall. The Pistons are in fifth at 42-33. They're 6-4 in their last 10, and now Of course, it was Pacers Bucks in this spot for so long, but now it's the Pistons, and that's because the Bucks have lost four games in a row, so they're down to 40 and 34. They are 1.5 games back of the Pistons to get back into that 4-5 matchup, which, to be honest with you, whether it's the Pacers or the Pistons, I would much rather play either of those two teams than play the Knicks. So the Bucks should really try their best to get up there. This is not a situation like in prior seasons where, teams have rested some players because they're okay with the matchup they're going to get. I don't think they should be settling for this matchup. I think that would just not be a very good idea. And I don't think they should do that. But then in the play-in bracket, it's starting to look a little bit more respectful, or respectable, I guess. The Hawks are at 36 and 38, so all of these teams are under 500, but they are 6-4 in their last 10, just came off a win against the Bucks. Then you have the Magic, who are 36 and 40. They're only a game back of the Hawks, and of course, been dealing with injuries, but starting to look more like the Hawks or the Magic of the past. Then you have the Heat, or the past year, I should say, not really beyond any of that. But then you have the Heat. They have won 5 in a row, so they are 34 and 41 now, just 1.5 games back of the Magic for the all-important 8 spot, which means that you could possibly play one game and in to the bracket. Then you have the Bulls, who are 6-4 in their last 10, 33 and 42, 5 games ahead of the Raptors for the final spot. The Bulls probably the most dangerous team in the play-in bracket, I would argue. Obviously, the Hawks have a lot more playoff experience, and the Magic were there last year and are a good seed. And the Heat obviously have a lot of playoff experience as well. But the Bulls have been playing really, really good basketball recently, like good enough to actually maybe steal a game or two in a series. Probably not against the Celtics or Cavs, though. So, as much as their hot streak is pretty impressive, I don't think any of these four teams are really pushing either of the top two teams in the East. And then, of course, you have the eliminated teams, the Nets at 25 and 51, 3-7 in their last 10. The Sixers at 23 and 52 have missed the playoffs for the first time since, I think, 2017. They have lost 8 games in a row at 23 and 52 now overall. Then you have the Hornets at 19 and 56, and the Wizards at 16 and 59. Finally, moving on to the Western Conference, you have the Thunder. They have clinched home field in the conference, which is a big deal. They are 14.5 games ahead of the Rockets, which is just crazy. Very close to clinching home field, or home court, I should say. I think I said home field earlier too, but home court for the finals as well, because they're already at 63 and 12. So very close to the best record in the league after it looked like that was the Cavs' record to lose. But the Thunder now have won 10 in a row, while the Cavs, as I said earlier, 5-5 in their last 10. So the Thunder now at 63 and 12. And then the Rockets, excuse me, second place at 49 and 27. They're 8-2 in their last 10. Doing a lot to claim that spot where they will play play-in team rather than any of the other teams that are in the top six currently. And I would argue there's not that big of a fall off from the top six to some of the teams in the play-in bracket, but other teams, there is definitely a big difference. So I'll get to that in a second. But you have the Nuggets, who are in the third seed currently, 47 and 28, 16 games back. But of course, 1.5 back of the Rockets is what's important. What's also important is they're one game ahead of the Lakers, who are 46 and 29, in position for the fourth seed. They have won 2 in a row, 6-4 in their last 10, 2 buzzer beaters last week alone, one against them, one for them. But they did beat the Grizzlies, as I mentioned in predictions, which is important because the Grizzlies are currently in fifth place. Obviously, flip that game result, and it's the opposite way around. But the Grizzlies have now lost 3 in a row. They are 2 behind the Lakers and only a half game ahead of Golden State, who is in sixth place, 7-3 in their last 10. But they're also only a game ahead of the Timberwolves and the Clippers, who are now just one game back of the Grizzlies, a half game back of the Warriors, even though they are in 7 and 8 spots respectively. Obviously, in a prior year, before the play-in bracket, the Timberwolves and the Clippers would be very safe. They're 6.5 games ahead of the ninth place teams, but instead, those two will be in the play-in bracket. And the teams under them, they have some playoff experience. They're a little bit dangerous, and I'll talk about that right now. The Mavericks are 37 and 39. We'll see what happens with Anthony Davis. Obviously, he came back and is playing now, but we'll see if his health can hold up. And then you have the Kings, who are 36 and 39. The Suns have lost 3 in a row. They just refused to make a charge into the playoffs, but of course, would be a dangerous team if they were able to make it, I guess. Then you have the Spurs at 32 and 43, and the Or sorry, the Spurs at 31 and 43, the Trailblazers actually ahead of them by a half a game, at 32 and 43. Technically not quite out of it because the Mavs and the Kings have been pretty bad recently. But you know, not going to compete with the Timberwolves and the Clippers if they made it anyway, to be honest with you. And then of course you have the eliminated teams, the Pelicans and the Jazz, 21 and 54 and 16 and 60 respectively. But this is a really tight race in the Western Conference. Obviously, you have four teams between seeds 5 and 8 that are only separated by one game. Then you have the three teams separated by 1.5 games, those being the Mavericks, the Kings, and the Suns, for the final two playoff spots, or sorry, final two play-in spots. So very interesting race going on there in the West. We'll just have to see how that one turns out. But that is all we have for the actual content of this podcast. Now to make a really quick announcement. This is the second to last podcast of weekly podcasts. We will still do more episodes in the future, don't get me wrong. But you know, the schedules just haven't lined up recently that well. As you can tell, I'm here hosting this alone again, and you know, I've had some issues in the past with just being able to actually get the episodes on a schedule that makes sense for both me and my dad. So makes a little bit more sense to just kind of take a step away and do episodes when there are very big events and interesting things to talk about. You know, maybe we'll do like an All-Star break check-in at MLB. We'll still be doing the college football preview episodes, all that good stuff, but we won't be doing weekly episodes going forward after the college basketball season ends, which of course is the reason why we haven't done any MLB coverage, because we're not going to continue the episodes going forward. Obviously, we'll probably talk about the NBA playoffs, maybe do an update after each round has concluded, something like that. But we aren't doing the weekly episodes going forward. But yeah, just wanted to make that quick announcement. We'll talk a little bit more about it probably next week when my dad is actually back on the podcast as well. But quick and dirty version is just that the schedules haven't lined up enough recently, and we're only getting busier, to be quite honest with everybody. So it makes more sense to just transition out of the weekly podcast content. The brackets will still be going next year unless I decide to change the name of it. We'll see. Probably won't do that, but it's possible. And the predictions will also stop for a little bit because, you know, no point in doing predictions if they're not reviewed on the podcast and talked about a little bit. But yeah, that'll be the update. And then we'll talk a little bit more about it again, like I said, on next week's episode. But that will conclude this week's episode of the 4th and 24 podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, like I said, last of the weekly episodes for a little bit. That will be April 8th, where we will not look back at weekend predictions because I won't be doing those anymore, obviously, since you know, no reviewing of that on the podcast doesn't really make any sense to do predictions. But we will be talking about college basketball, of course, reviewing the Final Four. And we'll talk a little bit about the NBA. And in the meantime, be sure to review my additional content, which includes my picks for last weekend's games. And they will not be posted going forward, like I said, but all of that content on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, number 24 on Twitter and Instagram, and some of that content on our website, 4thand24.com, including, of course, my brackets throughout the season. But now that the season's over, that's not very relevant anymore. But thank you for listening once again, and stay tuned for that update again next podcast.